Girl, this one made me sad.
Well, yeah, it's really awful.
As though, like, the rest of them haven't made me sad. But, like, for some reason, like, I was sad watching this both times I watched
the
it.
The whole thing sucks.
It's really
it
awful.
Stinks to high heaven,
It stinks to high heaven. Hi, Jillian Bezzavelli.
Hello, Patrick Hines.
Oh, girl. What about, we got to talk about the YouTube.
Yeah, we have a YouTube channel. So if you're watching this on YouTube, you're like, duh, I know.
Hi.
Hi.
And by the way, it took us about 6 months to hit 100,000 subscribers. It took us about another month to hit 150,000.
That's insane.
It's wild. We love you, YouTube. We see you.
Hi.
We're so happy that you're here. We're so happy to be doing this for you on the YouTube. Tell them about the Disky.
We have a Discord channel, I think it's called, or a Discord place to party.
Yeah.
That has channels in it. So we're talking about, like, the episodes, and we're talking about, oh, I forgot to check in today. I always check in and say, like, what we're recording. I forgot to do that today.
It's never too late.
I know. But we're, like, sharing animal pictures, and we're talking about music, and we're talking about true crime stuff that we are interested in, and then we're talking about, like, a lot of other stuff. That's also, there's also a channel where you can submit questions for us for, like, upcoming AMAs. It's
we love them. Make them interesting. I want to know the weird stuff you want to know.
Yeah.
Not too weird, but, like, you know, what are we talking about today?
Okay, this is What Happened to Karen Silkwood, The Lost Tapes. It's on Hulu.
A young mother found dead along a dark, deserted highway.
I don't have any memories of us together. My heart knows there's a hole there.
50 years later, her family is still wondering if someone else was involved.
She called and said, they're trying to kill me.
It was an accident.
A mystery so riveting, it inspired an Oscar-nominated film.
They're trying to kill me. They want me to stop what I'm doing.
Inside the renewed investigation into Karen Silkwood's death.
They run her off the road. This poor girl was killed. She was murdered.
I tell you, Karen, you better get the fuck out of there.
But I'm gonna shut him down before I go.
We believe that she brushed up against one of the deepest, darkest secrets held by the United States.
The new clues.
Here they are.
Here they are.
From never before heard audio tapes.
I don't want any trouble on my job. And I don't want any trouble with my car or anything else.
We open with a gentleman named Mike Meadows. He is... Now, here's the thing. Silkwood is, like, a known story.
It's a very famous movie called Silkwood.
1983, I think.
1983. Let me tell you the star-studded...
Yeah.
Meryl Streep,
yeah.
Kurt Russell, Cher. Cher won the Golden Globe. Directed by Mike Nichols, who also directed The Birdcage, by the way.
Oh, my God.
Written by Nora Ephron and Alice Arlen. Nora Ephron, like,
yeah.
When Harry Met Sally, My Blue Heaven.
Of course.
Sleepless in Seattle.
Wait, you didn't mention David Strathairn, who I had,
who's
like...
in everything.
He is in he's that guy from Everything.
Everything.
Biggest crush in the world. He's got floppy hair for... I love him. He was in The River Wild with Meryl Streep.
He's in Everything. He was in League of Their Own. He's in Everything.
Yeah, he was in Everything.
Everything. This was nominated for 5 Oscars.
Whoa.
Best Director, Actress, Supporting Actress, Original Screenplay, Film Editing.
Wow.
They were nominated. So this is, like, a huge story.
Did you ever see the movie? Because I never did.
No. By all accounts, it's, like, an incredibly hard watch because the story is so awful.
And the Silkwood Shower. Which I think I have seen that full scene. It's brutal.
It's in the, what do they call it? Like, the pop culture vernacular.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's a very famous moment in time because the story is, like, so important.
Well, this documentary opens with a guy named Michael Meadows. He's Karen's son. He was just saying that he was so young. Like, this kills me when kids, like, adult children of people who died a long time ago say this.
Michael was just 5 years old when his mom died. So young that when he closes his eyes to remember her, it's not always her face that he sees. Instead, it's Meryl Streep. Streep played Karen Silkwood in the Oscar-nominated 1983 film.
He sees Meryl Streep.
Playing her.
Like, does Meryl Streep send him a Christmas card every year?
Probably not.
Probably. She would if she knew. She seems
maybe
like
she's watched this, but she's so, you know.
Yeah, she's Meryl Streep.
She's Meryl Streep, do you know what I mean?
We're
here with two investigative journalists, Mike and Bob.
They love their jobs.
They love their jobs. They love each other.
Yes.
They are working with Michael to get answers. They've been working on this case for 50 years.
And they just refuse to accept the official narrative of what happened to Karen, which is total bullshit.
Yeah, the narrative is bullshit.
Yeah. No, what they're doing is great.
Right.
Them not accepting it is the opposite of whatever total bullshit is.
And they claim they have all this new evidence because they say that there are tapes of law enforcement confirming that Karen Silkwood was under surveillance. That'll make sense in 2 seconds.
One of those things is true. Like, they have tapes and there's new evidence. We'll see.
Aaron Katursky is here. He's the reporter and host of the doc.
Yeah.
And Mike and Bob met in radio news over 50 years ago. Aaron, our host, literally says, my notes say I'm supposed to ask you guys, guys if you know each other, but that seems very obvious.
They're basically holding hands because they're interviewed together. These are two men that are so comfortable with each other.
They're like in awe of what the other one does. They just have like, they're in love. They're
that's
like, it's
I
very,
feel
very
about
sweet.
You.
Aw, that's so
I'm in awe of what you do.
Back at you.
Someday we'll get interviewed together again and we'll be like Mike.
And the
and
person
Bob.
Will be like,
do you guys
it's
know
obvious
each
you
other?
Guys know each other, right?
Should I tell you about that time I went down on the submersible? That happened to us once.
I love that he literally says, my notes say I'm supposed to ask
it, and they kept
it in.
Just for clarity's sake, we did an interview once a very long time ago, and the guy who was interviewing us had just interviewed a guy who had gone on the submersible, and that was like 6 months before the whole thing went to shit.
I know.
That was wild.
That was crazy. So Rosemary and Linda are here. They're Karen's sisters.
Yes.
And they say that Karen knew she was being targeted and that Karen knew they were trying to kill her. If you don't know, Karen Silkwood is one of the most famous whistleblowers of all time. So
yes.
If you're brand new to this case, they kind of jump in assuming that you know a lot about it.
Yeah.
But we'll get into that in a second.
The sisters also give us a bit of background on Karen. Like, she loved people, never wanted to hurt anybody. She loved music. She loved Janis Joplin and Bonnie Raitt.
They're playing some of her Janis Joplin records.
Oh, my God. Whenever that happens, I'm like, how'd they get the rights to that?
I know. For 2 seconds and it, like, fair use and lighten up estate of Janis Joplin.
Couldn't agree more. Janis Joplin is the kind that, like, if she were still alive today, I would totally go to a concert.
Yeah, she wouldn't give a shit also.
She would not
care. If her music is in a story that's really important and needs to be, you know what I mean? She
well
would be like,
said.
Hold on.
Yes. No, you know what?
Give me those 33 cents.
Totally. No,
no
not Janis. Not my Janis Joplin.
I doubt it.
I can name one song by Janis Joplin. That's all I know.
The Piece of My Heart.
Yeah. Okay. That's it.
Travel down the road back again.
Girl, Kettle and Fire is back. This is that broth we're obsessed with. It's the easiest way to upgrade your wellness routine. I'm obsessed.
Yeah, it's rich, it's savory, it's slow simmered.
Yes.
And daily sipping supports gut health and digestion,
yep,
muscle recovery and energy, and immune function. This is like not your grandmother's broth unless she buys Kettle and Fire.
Unless she doesn't, in which case we hope she uses our code. The thing is, it has up to 19 grams of protein per serving. That's why I've been drinking it, A, because it's delicious and filling, but also like I'm really trying to up my protein. It keeps you full between meals and can help curb cravings.
Yeah, so you can have like a quick protein packed snack in the morning, or
yeah,
you can like, I don't know, that like 3 o'clock slump where you're like, oh my God, I have two more calls.
What do you mean? It's only 2 hours to bedtime.
Exactly. Also, my favorite part, you can just like instantly upgrade your meal. You can add it to rice, to soups or sauces for richer flavor and extra protein.
Anything you put water in, you can put this Kettle and Fire in.
Exactly.
So fam, we're obsessed. For a limited time, you can get a free carton of Kettle and Fire bone broth by going to kettleandfire.com/TCO.
Just buy any 3 cartons in store and they'll pay you back for one. This works on any flavor at any retailer.
You can find Kettle and Fire in over 22,000 plus stores nationwide, including my fave Costco, Walmart, Target, Publix, Whole Foods, Kroger, and Sprouts.
That's kettleandfire.com/TCO.
Yes.
Tell your grandma we said hi.
Tell her we said hey and we love her broth.
Only if she uses Kettle Fire.
Exactly.
It's the fine print. So yeah, Karen Silkwood, super smart. She studied really hard. She, quote, made excellent grades in school.
She was the only girl in her chemistry class, which was kind of, back then, was unusual. Girls didn't take chemistry class. You were gonna be a housewife.
And she like fought her way into a chemistry class and was amazing at it. And like, ultimately, they tell us this later, but like, she really wanted to use her chemistry knowledge in the world. Like, she wanted to do that as a job. And that's kind of how we end up where we end up.
Yeah. So Karen went to college on a scholarship and she ended up dropping out because she got married and had 3 kids. And then she got divorced and moved to Oklahoma. And this is sort of where the story begins.
Yeah. So Michael is her son. He's got 2 siblings that we never meet, but he was 3 and a half when they moved to Oklahoma. And like, once again, he has almost like no memory. Like, all of this happened before he was forming real memories.
Yeah.
I used to think about that. Every time you and I would get on a plane when Daisy was like a baby, I'm like, if this plane goes down, she will not remember me.
I think she will.
Well, now she will.
Now
but
she
like,
will.
But that's the part of this story that's really hard for me. I was saying to you before we started, like, this one was really hard for me for some reason. Maybe that's what it's rooted in, is the fact that this poor man has no memories of his mom, but yet somehow his mom's story is iconic. Like, it's so famous.
Yeah. It is. It's very famous. And like, when this movie came out, as per my research, it was a big deal. It really threw people off because they were like, wait, this was happening like last year.
Yeah.
Like, this was happening under everyone's noses.
Well, because what I didn't know is that this story we learn is so much bigger than just the contamination that we all know. But I mean, it's a global. Yeah. So she found out shit that would have affected the entire world.
And also she just kept like tugging at the string to see what would unravel. Like, I don't think she knew it was going to be that big, but she just kept asking questions.
But she knew she was going to die.
Right.
Because, and we'll get there in a minute, but like Karen gets to the point where like she's so contaminated by the plutonium she's working with that like, the reporters say to us at one point, like, this was what she wanted to do before she was like in her 30s.
Yeah, it's awful. So she's in Oklahoma and Karen gets a job at the Kerr McGee plutonium production plant. And she worked her way up to this like very lucrative position of lab tech.
Yeah. And so like we learn about this plant. We see the plant. It's still in this town today, but it's this like a band. It's like terror. It's like where the high school kids would go at night to scare each other, it feels like. And we learned
this Kerr McGee facility once represented the future of American energy independence. This was the 1970s. Nuclear energy was going from wartime to something toward peacetime. But Karen Silkwood said what went on in this facility was not safe.
Nuclear energy was like the way of the future at the time that Karen was working at this plant.
And Karen is like, cool. However, this facility is not safe.
Right.
Like almost immediately she knew that this was not fully on the up and up.
Yeah. And so Mike and Bob, again, they've been on this story for 50 years and they're sort of giving us their background as to like why they're like a dog with a bone with this particular story.
And it was Watergate. It was specifically the movie All the President's Men.
Yeah. And Woodward and Bernstein. Like, and if you don't know who they are, they were the investigative journalists, I think, for the Washington Post, who uncovered Deep Throat. Like, that was like the golden age of investigative journalism. There's a lot of that still happening today.
That movie is excellent, by the way. It will make you want to be a journalist for at least 5 minutes. It'll make you want to do what they did.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are some podcasts I've listened to that make me want to be like an investigator.
Yeah.
Like, there is something so beautiful about being that person who's awake at 4 a.m, like researching
they
that
did
thing.
It.
Yeah.
They were in the parking lot. They were knocking on doors at 2 a.m. Like, they were doing it. And because it's all true, it makes you be like, oh my God, what am I doing?
Right.
I've been wasting my life.
Well, and that's what Mike and Bob wanted to be. And like, this was their story. Like, they were there from the beginning.
So they say the plant from the beginning was not very well run.
And as time went along, it got worse. They fell behind production schedules. More and more people were getting contaminated. Getting contaminated at the Kerr McGee plant was
cost of doing business.
Yeah.
Getting contaminated at the Kerr McGee plant was the cost of doing business.
Ugh.
Like, and Karen, because of her knowledge, because she like took chemistry in 11th grade and cared about science, she will understand what a lot of people who worked at that plant didn't understand, because a lot of them were not very well educated. A lot of them were very young, but Karen knew the implications of working with these kinds of chemicals in a way that other people she worked with did not.
And the plant wasn't being honest about it.
Exactly.
Everyone.
Yeah. And it was like a super high paying job. So people, that was what they cared about.
So we meet Steve, and Steve knew Karen Silkwood. He's here with us today. He worked for the labor union that represented Karen and some other employees.
He worked for the Oil, Chemical, and Atomic Workers Union, to which I said, woof.
Yeah.
Atomic workers.
Crazy.
Do we still have those?
That's like what Homer Simpson did, right?
He was an atomic worker?
He like worked at the plant.
Yeah, I guess so.
The Springfield Power Plant, right?
Oh, God. Be safe, everybody.
Be
That's
safe,
your
everyone.
Job. Please be safe.
Dental plan.
Okay.
He's the one who recorded Karen.
That's what Homer Simpson did.
I think. Anyway, we hear Karen on the tapes explaining how bad this place was.
In the laboratory, we've got 18 and 19-year-old boys, you know, and 20 and 21. I mean, and they didn't have the schooling, so they don't understand what radiation is.
They would hire young kids who don't know what radiation even is.
Right.
They don't know to ask questions. They didn't know that they should be asking questions, let alone what to be asking.
Yeah.
And the plant wasn't telling anybody anything. So they were just like, I have this really great job that's kind of at the forefront of this really amazing thing in the world.
Yep.
And why would I ask a question?
And you'd be lucky to work here.
Yeah.
So we learned that Karen started at the plant in 1972. And the plant was originally designed to, quote, make the fuel rods that power a new kind of nuclear reactor.
A nuclear reactor.
Oh.
It sounds really scary.
It really does. That means that they were processing uranium and plutonium. And I said, I don't know much, but that doesn't sound good.
Yeah. So here's the thing about plutonium.
Oh.
It's one of the most radioactive substances on Earth.
Yes. It has a half-life of 24,000 years. I don't know what that means.
Half-life is like when it starts to decrease, when it's at like its 50% potency.
Oh. So I hit that like 15 years ago.
But then this is when it starts to like, when you're kind of at the other side of.
Yeah. Still not good though. Even if you're on the other side out of that half-life. I still want nothing to do with it.
Well, 24,000 years means that none of us are going to hear. This is not relevant to us
because
it's still going to be very potent for generations and generations.
And when you hear that, all you can hear is like the whoom.
Yes. It's that green ooze thing that's fluorescent.
This is not good.
It's what it feels like.
Why do we need it? For bombs?
For, what did I write down verbatim? A new kind of nuclear reactor.
I don't know. I don't think we need it.
Yeah. So it's very, 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 very dangerous.
How dangerous was the work Karen Silkwood and others at that plant were doing? Did they know it at the time?
No. There was very limited training provided to the employees, and nowhere in the training material was the word cancer ever used.
Again, it was like, just say thank you for the job and show up on time and clock in and clock out.
Well, and contamination with this stuff gives you fucking cancer. And they also say that nowhere in the training material was the word cancer ever used, which is why I'm so glad. I was just really glad to know there was a union, you know, that at least somebody was trying to do some kind of oversight
here. But my question is, like, the people who run the plant.
Yeah.
They knew and just didn't care, right?
Of course.
Like, why wouldn't you just tell people and be aware of it? Like, I know that the answer is money.
Yeah.
But, like, when you really lay it down like that, it's like, or you could just have everybody be safe and then make zillions of dollars for years and years and years instead of being the abandoned plant that the kids write graffiti in or whatever.
Exactly. No,
like, and people dying, by the way.
And also, like, maybe we just don't need to make things that give people cancer.
Because one thing that's missing from this is that this is bigger than Karen Silkwood, and she knew it. So, what happened to her is tragic, but how many other people are sick? This is the Erin Brockovich effect, right?
Yeah. A couple of times I'm like, whoa, no, this isn't Erin Brockovich. I kept doing that.
Like, how many other people got sick and died from cancer that we're not talking about right now?
Well, and we get a number. At some point, they tell us something like 2/3 of the people who work in this plant. And we learn kind of how this contamination was happening. So, we learned that Karen was working with what was called a glove box. So, imagine like a big plastic thing, and in the plastic thing is where all the really bad shit that gives you cancer is, and there's rubber gloves that you stick your hands in.
It was designed to protect workers from radiation while they handled tiny plutonium pellets.
There's always supposed to be a barrier between the worker and plutonium. And what was going on in this plant was that barrier was being breached.
That barrier was becoming breached, as they say. So, like, it's supposed to protect you from radiation while you're handling all these pellets, but because they're cutting corners or whatever, they don't care. They only care about money.
Right.
That barrier is becoming breached. And also, they're never saying the word cancer. Cancer doesn't exist.
No.
Cancer, never heard of it.
And,
her.
Like, I don't know that human beings should be, in any sense, touching fucking plutonium.
Right. But without the training, without being open about what is going on there, because people don't even know what it, like, what is it contaminated? Like,
exactly.
What does that mean? Like, how could I, a human being, I'm talking about in the 70s, they're like, that wasn't even on their radar to be thinking about.
No.
Contaminated.
You know, we learned that for the first few months, Karen was really happy. And like I said before, like, she was a smarty pants. She loved the science. And like, she was doing the kind of work she always wanted to do.
Yeah.
You know, and getting paid very well, by the way.
And I just do want to say too, like, people would go home and probably be sick and not know to make the connection.
Right.
That they're getting sick from work.
Well, and as you were saying earlier, the company's counting on that. That's why it's not part of the training.
Exactly.
Travel down the road back again. Girl, let me tell you about Against the Odds. So look, you're standing on the beach when you notice something strange. The horizon doesn't look right. At first, all you can see is a thin white line. Then the line starts to raise. You realize it's not the horizon at all. It's a 30-foot tall wall of water, and it's racing straight toward you. What would you do?
On the day after Christmas in 2004, a 9.1 magnitude earthquake hit off the coast of Indonesia, triggering a devastating tsunami. It struck Thailand without warning. No alarms, no cell phone alerts, no evacuation.
In this season of Against the Odds, experience one of the deadliest natural disasters in history through the perspectives of those who did everything they could to survive.
Follow Against the Odds on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of Against the Odds, Tsunami in Thailand, early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. So Don Gummo's here, Karen's friend.
Okay, can I talk about him for 20 minutes?
Because your big crush played him in the movie.
So David Strathairn plays this guy in the movie. I don't know if this man is gay or not, but they show us older pictures of him. It's in this moment that we're talking about Don that everyone's like, Karen loved everybody. They didn't care if you were different or whatever. And then we meet Don.
And they're like besties, like super besties.
They were and like in the movie, they show a clip of David Strathairn playing this guy and he's chewing gum and he pulls it like a strand of it out of his mouth and she, but like they, it was that kind of gay thing. And then we flash back to these pictures of Don from the 70s with him and Karen.
Yeah.
This man had the most glorious head of stringy, long, blonde hair. And I had to actually pause and look at the photo. I'm like, that is my dream hair. When I go to sleep at night in my Helix mattress and my Miracle Made sheets, that is what I imagine. That's what I dream of.
Yeah.
I dream of that kind of hair.
Wow.
If I could have any magical power, it would be that hair. That long, stringy, blonde hair.
When you say stringy, I feel like you don't mean stringy. Because sometimes people could say stringy as like, oh, like not, you mean like luscious.
Well, no, it is kind of thin.
Okay.
But it would look great in a top knot.
Yeah.
Like one of those like things where like the cool, like effeminate guys put the hair like in the half up, half down.
Yeah.
I'm just saying Dawn and I would have been tight back in the 70s. And I really want that hair.
Okay, great. I feel like we can make that happen.
I really want that
Can't
hair.
We do anything now?
I don't know.
Why not?
What I mean? Nothing feels possible anymore. Although, recently, things are on the up and up.
A little bit.
A little bit better. So maybe we can. Who knows?
Hello from New York City.
I just wanted to give Dawn a shout out because I love David Strathairn.
I love
the moment in the movie where they share the gum strand.
Yeah.
And I loved his 70s hair. I was so into it.
And Dawn says like...
Everybody knew Carrie and I were buddies. She was a firecracker. She could be sweet. And she could be kind. And she could be compassionate.
Everybody knew that we were buddies.
Yes.
So that kind of means like you mess with one, you mess with both.
Totally.
I just love that dynamic. So a worker sets off an alarm in the plant, right?
Yeah.
Like, and whenever that happens, they'd have to go through what they call decontamination. Now in society and because of the movie, we know it as a Silkwood shower. That's how big the story was and how big the movie was.
Yeah. And we see like a clip of the movie and it is fucking brutal.
They say they show it in devastating detail in the movie. That's the word choice.
I can see it.
Like,
because it looks to me like they're being, because they have plutonium on their body. And so two people hold them down.
Yeah.
They restrain them in a shower. They're in moon suits. You are naked.
Yeah.
And they are scrubbing your body with wire brushes.
And it's very, you're being manhandled.
Yeah.
It's super strong water in your face and your mouth.
Yeah.
It's hard water pressure. It's painful. It's humiliating. It's scary. It's totally traumatizing. It's totally dehumanizing. But also it's like, I just wonder if you need to do this.
Yeah.
And this is how you get yourself clean from a day at the office.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just like not safe.
Once again,
hello?
I don't think we need to be making this stuff. Now, I'm sure there's somebody in the sciences who's listening to
who's
screaming at me and it does great. I'm sure. Fine. Right.
But like, not like this.
No, especially now. We have robots and I don't want robots taking people's jobs, but I want them taking these jobs.
Okay.
I want robots taking these jobs.
Right.
And then we hear Steve from the union, who I love, on a recording with Karen in the 70s, telling Karen, girl, you only have to work in this plant for 1 month to have enough contamination on your body to cause cancer. And that she's like, don't fucking tell me that. He's like, I am going to tell you that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But also like this, what they call like the Silkwood shower, the plant is arguing that everything is on the up and up with quote existing regulations.
Yes.
So big plutonium, like the bad
big
guys
plute,
here.
As we call it.
The villains in every Muppet movie, the oil tycoons. Oh,
totally.
Willem Dafoe is playing them probably.
Yeah.
Would testify.
The role he was born to play.
You know, they testified that they, quote, tried to be responsive to requests and all of their violations were low level.
Yeah.
And that, like, these violations don't present any problems or any harm to the public and employees. Lies on lies on lies on lies. It's all about the money.
And the union is here to say that, like, complaining about safety concerns was near impossible.
Right.
You know?
To this day, both Kerr and McGee, the two evil guys.
Yeah.
They have streets named after them.
I know.
Still.
Robert S. Kerr was the most powerful person in the state, easily.
And the U.S. Senate.
And the U.S. Senate. He did good things for Oklahoma. Because he was so powerful, he brought a lot of projects to Oklahoma where a lot of money was spent. President Kennedy, during the time, came here to kiss the ring.
Twice.
JFK came to kiss the ring twice, they say.
I looked him up to be like, who's he? He was with the Democrats. But they say this guy did a lot of good things for Oklahoma. He brought a lot of projects to the state.
Well, this isn't one of them.
And like President Kennedy would come to, quote, kiss the ring.
Like by a lot, this wasn't one of them.
No.
This is really awful.
I know. It's what we were talking about with the Tylenol murders. It's just like putting money ahead of people. And it's like... Yeah, we just can't be surprised. You know what I mean? But they were counting. Like, the reason Karen Silkwood stood out, the reason her story is what it is because she was very smart, she was very educated, and she understood the implications. And they were sort of counting on their workforce not being like her.
And also, on top of that, like, in addition to that, this was a time when all of this nuclear power was seen as the savior of America.
Yes.
So the public was really in support of the plant.
Yes.
And the plant paid very, very well, $3 an hour. which today is like 50 an hour.
Yeah.
So the town was booming. Everybody loved the plant. It's saving the world. No one wanted it to close. And honestly, Karen Silkwood was coming in and ruining everyone's good time. She was being a bummer.
Right.
And no one wanted to hear about it.
Except for the union guy.
Right. Which, like, obviously, but like, everything's great. Why do you gotta be a bummer, says everyone to Karen Silkwood.
And it's like in this moment that we get Michael the son back to say that, like, in the 50 years since his mom's death, he's been carrying out his own investigation. And then this is why it was so hard for me. And I can finally identify it.
Yeah.
Because he says to the camera,
I think it's about what I missed, you know, like what the could-haves, what could have been affects me more than actual sadness of losing her, because I don't have any memories of us together. My heart knows there's a hole there.
That is so heartbreaking.
Yeah, and the question mark of what actually happened to her. How did she die and why? And was there someone behind it? There's that. It's not like there's so many unknowns here.
Yeah.
And she became a legend and Meryl Streep is playing her. And,
right.
And there's like a lot to unpack as someone, as a little kid like that, I'm sure.
And all of his life. Like, can you imagine, like, you're the guy at the cocktail party and you're like, you're fucking Karen Silkwood's kid. And then all of a sudden, that's all that person wants to talk to you about for the rest of your life. Like, this has been this guy's life, his whole life.
And it's not his last name.
No, right.
And I don't know why that is, but I would completely understand if he did it for like a year when he was growing up and then being like, no, I'm going
to
go.
Or maybe when she had to leave the dad and go raise those kids, like the three kids on her own, she's like, I'm dropping that son of a bitch's last name. The kids can keep it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But like, can
Unless
you imagine?
Unless he's a great guy, in which case I say sorry.
Whatever. But if you like introduce yourself and you're like, wait, Silkwood, oh my God, I just saw that movie.
What
and
a then last it's like, name. Because it's not like it's, you know, Johnson.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
And it's like a pretty last name, but it's like everyone's going to be like, oh my God.
Right.
Like that movie.
Like
and it's
The Shower.
Like, and it's like, oh no, that's not it. Like, it's a movie, but it's also my mom.
Right.
And now there's this horrible connection to
Excuse
it.
Excuse me, Cher.
Cher. So our journalist friends are telling us how dangerous this whole place was. Like, they say the entire wall was contaminated, every bit of it.
So they're in the plant now, this dilapidated old building, and they're pointing out all of the holes in the wall where they had to, like, actually remove the plutonium. And one of them goes,
all the way to the top.
So the whole wall was contaminated.
Contaminated, every bit of it.
And we hope it's not now.
And I hope it's not now. And I'm like, can you guys get out of there?
Like,
can we just err on the side of caution
here? Yeah, we can film this elsewhere.
Didn't we learn this the hard way? Just, why is that building still standing?
And honestly, it's not adding that much anyway.
No,
so.
Knock that shit down.
I know.
You know? Like,
I know.
What?
The half-life is 24,000 years. We're not even.
I mean.
We haven't even scratched the surface of it.
Oh my, we're not even. I mean.
We never will.
We never.
Like, the Earth will explode by the time that happens.
The plutonium will still be here.
We'll still be here.
The plutonium and the cockroaches.
Fuck off, both of you. I don't need either of them.
No.
So, like, what happened? So part of Karen's job was doing quality control checks, and she was seeing all of these safety concerns firsthand. And she was like, no to that. Like, she's not going to let this stand.
Yeah.
But the plant wasn't listening to her or doing anything about it. So she was the person, like, who would see all these horrible things and then do her job. And then they'd be like, shut up, you idiot girl.
Like, the only way to make Karen go away would be to do the necessary upgrades to make it so that, like, this was no longer a safety concern. We're talking money. And so her son, Michael, says, when she went from being a nuisance, she just basically being the woman in the background being like, it's not safe.
It's not safe.
That
We're
glove
all dying.
Thing doesn't work. I've got plutonium all over my face. When it went from just being that person to being somebody who was going to actually cost them money by either maybe shutting down the plant or doing whatever it took to do the upgrades to make it safe, that was when Michael is saying she had a target on her
back. But in the most cynical way I can say it.
Yeah.
You got to spend money to make money.
Of course.
So what they could have done is done this right, whatever right is for the time, and still maybe not be the abandoned plant.
I mean, my thinking on that is just that maybe there is no way to do it right.
That's what I'm saying.
And so
they
like, they would have to have shut down the plant. Like, if she were able to, like, I mean, when we see how top level she was getting with, like, where she was getting, how much information she had and who she was giving it to, this plant absolutely would have been shut down.
Yes.
You know? Girl, Chime is back. Look, Chime understands that every dollar counts. That's why when you set up a direct deposit through Chime, you get access to fee-free features like free overdraft coverage, getting paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit, and more.
Yeah, so Chime is banking done right.
Yes.
And with qualifying direct deposits, you're eligible for free overdraft up to $200 on debit card purchases and cash withdrawals.
Open a checking account with no monthly fees and no maintenance fees, and not to mention the fact you get access to over 47,000 fee-free free ATMs. That's more than the top three national banks combined. I told you about the time I paid that $6 fee.
I know. And let me tell you, like, sometimes you need cash and it's an emergency.
Yes.
And it's not just like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm paying this insane fee for a bottle of water,
yeah,
which also can be an emergency. But like,
yes,
you never know when you need that ATM,
100%.
That fee-free ATM.
I was in a jam. I had to have the guy. I had to pay the $6.
You had to do it.
Not if I had Chime.
Not anymore, see?
So fam, we love Chime. It's so great. You can work on your financial goals through Chime today.
Open an account in 2 minutes at Chime.com/TCO.
That's Chime.com/TCO.
Chime feels like progress. And fee-free ATMs, hello.
Chime is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. Spot me eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Timing depends on submission of payment file. Fees apply at out-of-network ATMs. Bank ranking and number of ATMs according to U.S. News and World Report 2023. Chime checking account required.
Girl, Home Chef is back. You know we love the Home Chef. It is rated number one by users of other meal kits for quality, convenience, value, taste, and recipe ease.
Yeah, so Home Chef makes cooking simple. Fresh food delivered, easy recipes to follow, and meals that actually taste great. And guess what? Gordon Ramsay has joined the chat.
Yeah!
So with Gordon Ramsay's exclusive recipes on the Home Chef menu, you can enjoy five-star meals without the stress.
Yeah, and it's not one-size-fits-all, fam. Home Chef has over 30 meal options each week with choices for different diets and tastes. We do a whole gluten-free thing for me. It's amazing.
Yeah, and so you can choose from Gordon Ramsay's co-branded dishes that are featured across Home Chef's culinary collection.
Yeah.
And the classic meal kits and the express options. So you have options
here. It's so fun. I'm obsessed with the website. You just go through, you add, you take away, you get to see what they have. The food all looks so good.
So many options.
You're saving so much money over like ordering out or even going to the grocery store. Like, give me one reason not to do Home Chef.
I can't.
Okay, great.
Home Chef customers save an average of $86 a month on groceries.
It's unbelievable.
Come on.
So fam, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering our listeners 50% off and free shipping for your first box, plus free dessert for life. Go to homechef.com/TCO.
That's homechef.com/TCO for 50% off your first box and free dessert for life.
Homechef.com/TCO must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert.
Yeah.
But you will love it. It's great.
You will love it.
It's so good.
So 1974, Karen goes to Washington, D.C. to meet with the union leaders.
Which I gotta say, like, pour one out for Karen. Like, three kids, full-time job,
yeah,
single mom. She's making time. Like, she cares that much that she's going on a trip to D.C., leaving her kids to go, like, make some hay to save some lives.
Yeah. And the union's like, Karen, girl, we hear you.
Yeah.
But we can't take on this major corporation without evidence. And Karen's like,
she becomes something of an investigator for her union to gather the evidence.
She volunteered for it right off the bat. And she was talking about all the stuff that she had come across. They said, well, we can't take on somebody like Kerr McGee without evidence. And she volunteered.
I'll be right back. I'll get the evidence myself, BRB.
And there, Steve is like, it cannot be understated how dangerous this is. Like,
and
this
Steve
is
from
so
the union
dangerous.
Tells her.
Yes.
He's like, okay, fine. Because there's no stopping Karen Silkwood.
Right.
Right. So he's like, okay, fine. If you're going to do this, be careful. And above all, don't tell anybody what you're doing.
Yes.
Because you already have a target on your back. And now you're actively investigating and gathering evidence. Like, you can't tell anyone you're doing this.
And we're going to learn, you know, they say it's somewhere in here soon. Like, one of the reasons she was doing this was because she knew she was dying anyway.
Right.
You know? And, like, she's doing this on the way out. And they say that she's reporting, like, important safety protocols are being ignored. Factory reports are being falsified. So, like, they knew.
They know.
They know.
And Aaron, our host, this is when he says something that made my jaw drop. He says, he's asking the journalist, and he's like, didn't she become walking evidence herself?
Yes,
and I was like, holy shit.
Because she's compiling a long list of radiation exposures. So, like, she's taking fucking names.
Right. So she was first contaminated in July of 1974, and she would continue to test positive for plutonium poisoning, which she was forced to do weekly and then eventually daily.
Yeah.
So she had to do these urine tests. And the plant, she is so, like, her tests are coming back so positive for plutonium, however you say that. Like,
yeah,
the results were like,
extra,
oh my God,
positive.
Like, extra, like, so bad that the,
yeah,
plant is now testing her apartment.
Right.
Because one day she tested positive even though she wasn't in the lab that day.
And the reason they're testing it is because they're starting to point the finger at her that she's faking this.
Like,
that, like, she's either stealing plutonium or she somehow is lying.
She's,
like,
doing it to herself.
Exactly.
For the drama.
Exactly.
Like, give me a break. And it's like, how can the plant be doing all of these tests and still do nothing?
And, like, we see the scene from the movie where they're emptying out her house, like, against her will to test everything in there. And some guy from the company is saying, like, did you put the plutonium in the house yourself? And he says, I know you would do anything to hurt the company.
Like, to slow down on this, dear listener, it's her.
Yes.
It's Karen Silkwood. She's that contaminated.
Right.
That she contaminates everything around her. This is a human being we're talking about.
Well, and one of the reasons that was happening, now they say this to us, and it took me a minute to sort of digest this. Our reporters say,
unbeknownst to her, and this was proven conclusively, someone spiked the kits, put plutonium in the sample containers. She was horribly contaminated.
And the plutonium came from an area of the plant she had no access to.
It was under lock and key.
Under lock and key.
Somebody did contaminate her on purpose.
Even more than she already was?
Right. Like, somebody took plutonium and they said that she couldn't have done this to herself because that kind of plutonium was kept under lock and key in an area of the building that she had no access to. They are actively trying to kill her.
To shut her up.
Yeah.
These people have streets named after them.
Exactly. I mean, literally.
Every, like, little bit in my notes.
Yeah.
In big, bold letters. They still have streets named after them.
We gotta rename those. Pensavalle Way.
Like, God.
Pensavalle Way.
Look, I'm not all that great, but I'm not this guy.
Hines
Ave. I'm not this bad.
I want the intersection of Pensavalle Way and Hines Avenue.
Let's do it.
You know what I mean?
I mean,
give me a Hines Circle.
At least do what's the most basic street name? Main Street. At least get that guy's name off it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't. It doesn't need to be me, but it's got to be like Main Street and Vine or whatever.
And it's not like we're breaking the story. You know what I mean?
This
like.
Is a 50-year-old story.
And, like, they made a movie out of it with Meryl Streep. What are you doing putting the names on?
And Cher and Kurt Russell.
Exactly. And David Strathairn. Again.
Hello.
At 2 Pensavalle.
No, I love it. He's in everything.
He's, like, played the gay guy.
I know.
He shared that gum moment. It was so cute.
It's very cute. It's
like
very cute.
A thing a gay guy and his friend would do.
Yeah. Karen would later say that she felt it, and like how she was so contaminated that she, and this could have been her own mind playing tricks on her, but probably not, just based on how like she was so contaminated that she's contaminating things around her. Like, I don't know, maybe her children or something, that maybe she'd be that terrified. But she says that, she goes, I feel like the contamination is coming out of my body. I can't imagine what that must feel
that
like.
That is the embodiment of that, like, whoomp,
whoomp. You just like, feel like she's a walking contamination. Yes. Like, it's terrifying.
And to answer your earlier question, this is where they say,
government records would later show that more than 70 workers, over half the employees working inside that plant, had been exposed to airborne plutonium, putting them at risk for acute radiation poisoning, cancer, and eventually death.
Risk for acute radiation poisoning, cancer, and death.
Like,
airborne.
Oh,
which means that you don't
God.
Have to touch it. Like, no matter what they were
You're
doing, it wasn't
in.
Working.
Yeah.
It wasn't working.
So by October of that year, things were so bad that Steve, the union guy, is urging Karen to get out. We hear this call between them, and it's in this call that Karen is like, I gotta shut them down before I go.
And so I just want to say, they skipped this, because I was kind of like, what is happening that she has, not just the contamination, which I know is awful, but like, what has she been saying in public? Like, how bad is the press for these guys on this?
Right.
So I looked it up, and in the summer of that year, 1974, she testified about this to the Atomic Energy Commission. And she says everything that we've been saying, but like, it's out there now. On the record. Like, she's talking about evidence of spills and leaks and alleging that the company's falsified inspection records. So everything we just learned about.
Yeah.
But Karen is talking about it to a lot of people publicly on the record. So, like, that's why the heat is really being turned up on her. And, like, that's why this conversation with her friend Steve, the union rep, where he's like,
I tell you, Karen, you better get the fuck out of there. That place... That place is going to turn into a hellhole. It's going to get...
But I'm going to shut them down before I go.
Yes, I'm going, but I'm going to shut them down on my way out. Like, there's no way I'm still going
to
be quietly.
I love that she just fucking walks into work. Yeah, I testified yesterday, bitch. And, like, and here I am to clock in.
That's what I mean. And they're kind of like, how do we stop her?
Yeah.
Like, she will not be stopped.
It's like, this was like good Roseanne energy. Remember when Roseanne was good back in the day?
I'm losing it.
I know.
I'm losing it.
God, but there were, like, I remember Roseanne, like, staging a protest at the plant and, like, getting everyone to clock out. Like, it was...
Show?
Yeah, there was a moment.
There's that great Dan moment where he walks out the door, the back door with the sister's husband, where he like goes to beat the shit out of him.
Oh yeah,
like such a good.
And
moment.
There's also like the Laurie Metcalf dad's dead.
That's
like,
great.
I mean, oh my
that's
god,
that's very good.
I told you about the time I met Laurie Metcalf at the dog park, and it was just me and her. No, and she literally, I saw that it was her. It was just me and her, and I swear to God, she looked up at me and her eyes said, "Gay boy, don't mention
do
dad's dead. Gay boy, don't."
I've had like four of them today.
I can't. She's in Hell's Kitchen.
I can't do it.
She's on our turf. It's like
she
us being in the ocean.
She can't walk down 8th Avenue.
No, dad's dead.
No,
he's fine. Sense is love.
That moment where he just takes his jacket.
Oh, also, yeah.
It's very good.
Yeah.
So Karen did have a plan. And she'd called her family a few weeks before she was killed, saying, like, I'm going to come home. I just have some loose ends to tie up. But, like, because everyone wants her to get the hell out of there.
Yes.
And maybe, like, undo some of this or get the treatment she needs or something and, like, be home with her kids while she still can. I mean, it's everyone knows it's really bad for her.
Right.
But I think part of it, I mean, she's not here to tell us this, unfortunately, but I think part of it is, like, I'm so far gone, I have to do this.
Yeah, well, right. And so November 11th, 1974, 2 days before she dies, she goes to a place called Los Alamos, which is the National Laboratory for Screening. And apparently it's also the site of the top secret government program that developed the first atomic bomb.
I'm like, if we have to do that, your plant is not working.
No.
If we're going to top secret government locations for super secret screenings that no one can know about, it's not working.
Can we also maybe, like, regular human beings not be touching the things that go into making the atomic bomb. You know what I mean?
I mean...
But the results are bad.
The results aren't good. There's plutonium in Karen's lungs. Technically, it's in the acceptable range. She flies home November 12th.
There's an acceptable range of plutonium in my lungs?
I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it.
No.
I don't want to hear it. Shut up. So I don't care what the answer is.
No, she flies home the next day, November 12th. Steve, the union guy, is super worried about her.
But, like, Karen and Steve are fucking done.
Yes.
They're ready to go public. Enough is enough. She has everything she needs now.
Yes, yes. Because, like, once again, the testing was really bad. She's not going to live long one way or the other.
No, and she's like, oh, here's the evidence from that super secret, top secret thing I just had to do.
Right.
Like, she has more than enough.
Yeah.
So Union Steve sets up a meeting with Karen and Steve and David Burnham from the New York Times.
Yeah, so he's the guy who broke the Serpico story. Tell us what that is.
It's all about all the corruption in the NYPD.
In the Al Pacino movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Another very, very, very famous movie about something that actually happened.
Yeah.
So that came out 10 years before Silkwood.
Oh, really?
It came out in 1973, yeah.
Well, so this guy broke that case, and his first meeting with Karen and Steve is November 13th, 1974. And they say, like, these were the final days of Karen's life. Obviously, she didn't know it.
But at first, David said no. He goes, I don't want to go. That's not my beat. To which I say, David, we don't have time for this.
David, girl, he says the bureau chief made him do it. Like, girl, can you just?
His boss was like, David, you're going. He's like, fine.
Fine, I'll go.
Fine.
But now we sort of get into the final days of Karen's life, and they say that, like, they were very hard. There was an enormous amount of pressure on her.
She essentially was a spy, an untrained spy, but a spy inside her own company. It is a hard job. I think she must have known that her life was at risk.
Yeah. She thought she was going to die from the plutonium anyway.
An untrained spy inside her own company. Like, that must be fucking terrifying.
Well, she's keeping so many secrets. All of the pressure is on her shoulders. Like, she knows she's going to die from the plutonium, which is, like, horrible. I hate that we're talking about a human being and using the word contaminated.
I know.
It just is so disgusting.
I know
that that's scientifically the word. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
But it just feels so dehumanizing.
Like, once again, you only had to work at this plant for a month to get the level of contamination that she got.
And she's also, like, I mean, I'm sure some people were like, Karen, you're paranoid. You're almost out. But she was like, I think they're trying to kill me.
Yeah.
Because the facts are, she knows too much.
Yes.
She's talking about it. She's gathering evidence. And she has the ear of a lot of people.
Yes.
Like, she was absolutely right to be feeling that.
And we haven't even gotten there yet, but there's, like a huge international crisis secret that she also becomes aware of, which is another reason they're trying to kill her. We'll get there in a second.
Okay.
Girl, Everyday Dose is back. Look, Everyday Dose is amazing. It's coffee plus benefits, and it's the thing that you can, like, easily do something good for yourself because you're having your morning coffee every day anyway. Switch to Everyday Dose so you get these added amazing benefits.
Yeah, you know we love a good life hack.
100%.
We need them these days.
Yeah, we need
a little extra boost. And so if coffee alone just isn't cutting it anymore, this is a next level upgrade.
Well, listen, because it includes things like lion's mane, chaga, collagen protein, and nootropics to fuel your brain, boost your focus, and give you clean, sustained energy all day long. It tastes just like coffee without the downside. Now, this was what sold me.
Mm-hmm.
No crash, no jitters, just clean, sustained energy. Because I'd be, like, working strong all morning with my regular coffee, and then I would have the crash. Not with Everyday Dose.
Yeah, and now you're like, oh, well, but I need the coffee, but I'll deal with the crash. No. Now we're not, like, muscling through anything anymore.
Exactly.
We're done with that.
So, fam, get 61% off your first Coffee Plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer with over $100 in free gifts, by going to everydaydose.com/TCO or entering TCO at checkout.
That's everydaydose.com/TCO for 61% off your first order.
Everyday Dose is also available at your local Target.
We love it.
We love it.
So the day she died was the day she was supposed to meet with the New York Times.
Yes.
So the night before, she goes to visit her friend, Don. And she basically is like, Don, someone's following me. I'm absolutely terrified. So she spends the night there because she just needs someone else to be around her. She doesn't feel safe.
Right. Exactly. So on Wednesday, November 13th, this is the day that she dies. They say she goes to work.
Which is insane to think about, by the way.
I know. After work, around 5 o'clock, she drives to the local diner for a union meeting. And she's carrying a folder full of papers. Now, we assume this is the folder she's going to give to the New York Times. This is all the shit.
Because this is the night she's meeting with the Serpico guy who broke the story. Like, everything's going to break tomorrow.
Yes.
So she gets up and goes to work. She goes to the union meeting and she has the folder of papers that she's going to present to the New York Times to be like, here's what we have.
And this woman, Jean, a fellow employee, like, she's on camera back in the 70s saying, like,
her friend and fellow Kerr-McGee employee, Jean Young, was there and reportedly the last person to see her alive.
She said, I've got everything together. And she did. Why? Swear to God in front of God, you know, she had it.
You saw it?
Yes.
I saw the folder.
And she said she had all her evidence ready to go.
Don, the fun gay guy with the long hair, he contributed to the folder.
Oh, fun.
Thanks, Don.
And Karen was like, she was fine, but she was also stressed.
Yeah.
So she wasn't like, because that's important. So she was stressed and she was distraught. She's about to go to this life-changing meeting. Like, this is it.
Yes.
Tomorrow, everything's going to change in one way or another, right? It was like, so she's a wreck.
Yeah.
She's going up against these evil Muppet villain zillionaires.
Yeah. So she leaves the diner union meeting at 7:15 p.m. We're told it's dark, but her friends say she was alert. 7 miles down the road is where she crashes.
So, yeah, just to stress that, like, she was at a union meeting at a diner.
Yeah.
I know diners have full bars, which everyone forgets.
Well, I would have forgotten
diners
that.
Have bars.
Oh,
God. It's very weird.
Well, now I'm starving.
Right. I just tasted before. I almost said this out loud, but I didn't like the taste of like the pickle on a sandwich, like mixed with the condiments. I just like that's what I, that very specific
like a mayo
flavor.
Mustard situation.
Like something where you just like bite in, you get like that great bite of the pickle.
Yep. Oh, God.
Okay, so now my mouth's watering. Okay. Just saying. But the point is, like, she was stressed, but she was alert. Like, she was ready. This is it. This is going to change everything. So she wasn't hammered. She was getting into her car to go have the biggest conversation of her fucking life.
Yeah, so she's driving down Highway 74. It's a two-lane road. The speed limit is 55 miles an hour. It's rural and dark. And then they say,
what exactly happened next is the great mystery of Karen Silkwood's life and death. Her small Honda Civic ended up smashed on the east side of the highway, jammed into a concrete culvert. Karen was declared dead at the scene.
She's declared dead at the scene. So essentially, her car went off the road somehow. If you don't know what a concrete culvert is, in looking at it, it looks like they burrow under the highway for like a drainage ditch or something. And this is the cement on the sides of that that is sort of keeping the road up.
Yeah.
So it's like a big concrete slab.
And law enforcement immediately says, oh, she ran off the road by herself. Like that from without even investigating it. Like they're writing their documents where it's like, oh, she like ran off the road somehow because she was hammered probably.
And this becomes the accepted story of how Karen Silkwood died.
Because the Oklahoma State Highway Patrol maintains that based on the tire tracks that they looked at for 2 seconds, Karen didn't appear to turn the steering wheel, meaning she was asleep or, quote, in a state of stupor.
And they say they also found a pill bottle in her purse. And we do know that she'd been prescribed a sedative to help with her anxiety because she's out there trying to save the fucking world.
Right. But she'd only driven about 7 minutes. And all of the witnesses at the diner say that she was alert and fine. And even if she popped a pill the minute she got in the car, 7 minutes, like she wouldn't have totally fallen asleep, which is what they're trying to say.
And why would she have? Just think about the logic of that.
Oh.
This woman is about to like go to the New York Times with the story to save all these lives. It's literally her life's work.
She's been through plenty.
She's going to pop a fucking Xanax before she gets to the car. No.
No.
And our reporter friends, the ones that have been on it for 50 years, are saying,
it was a concerted effort. First off, to make Karen Silkwood look like a floozy and a drug addict and, you know, not somebody you could trust.
And not somebody that you could trust.
Right. She was crazy and she was paranoid. She was making up all these
things.
And
a mess. And she just didn't have her shit together.
And so the steering wheel, though, was bent and broken, which does not match up with the she just fell asleep and didn't even turn the wheel narrative.
Right. And they're saying that, like, it appears that she braced her arms for impact. So the same cop who's like, oh, she drove off the road, they say to him, it looks like she braced for impact. So, like, she couldn't have been asleep at the wheel if that's the case, right? And he's like, yeah. Actually, yeah, you're right.
Also, the biggest thing, the folder with all of the evidence is missing. Forever and ever missing. It has never been recovered.
What we're told is that there were papers that were scattered all over the scene. One of our reporter friends says somebody scooped them all up and put them back in the car as the car was towed away.
They say the accident report never confirmed what those papers at the scene were.
Yeah.
That's really, really interesting that she had the thing that was going to blow this whole thing up.
Right.
Piles and piles of paper. She was on her way to blow it all up.
Right.
Then she gets in an accident and now the papers are nowhere.
Right.
Weird.
Yeah. And especially, we're going to get more information on this in a second. So the union brings in their own crash expert, a guy named A.O. Pipkin.
His name is Adolphus Oscar Pippin.
Adolphus Oscar? I'd go by A.O.
A.O. Pipkin.
A.O.
A.O. River!
But he would eventually consult on the crash that killed Princess Diana. And he says, like, we see him in an interview at the time. He says,
in my opinion and the people that I've had working with me, there's no circumstantial evidence there to indicate that somebody may hit, another vehicle may have hit the car in the rear.
Another vehicle may have hit the car in the rear, being the thing that drove Karen's car off the road.
Right. But there are also other ways to mess with a car other than crashing into it.
Yeah.
You know,
for
like,
sure.
There are other ways to make her lose control or
I've
whatever.
I've had a brake line or two in my life.
Really?
No, can you imagine?
I was gonna say, what's that like? How do you do that?
You feel all powerful.
Really?
Yeah, you just...
One snip?
One snip and that's it.
Wow.
Yeah, don't cross me.
That's interesting because then the person feels no power or control when they're trying to press the
brake. I've actually like been in a car where I've been like, what would happen if my bike, if I went to put on the brakes right now and like my, and it didn't work.
Some of my anxiety dreams manifest that way where I'm driving a car and I'm like, I can feel it right now and I can feel it in the dream that I have both feet on the brake. Like I'm like up
and
in
it's not
seat,
working
and nothing is slowing down.
Oh, that's awful.
It's really, but it's such a visceral, like I can feel it in the dream that like, it's not stopping and all of my weight is on it. And I'm like up, you know, like on those stupid bikes at the gym.
Oh,
what is
yeah.
It? Spinning.
Yeah.
Which is fun, but it always hurts my butt. Like, I just don't, I can never get comfortable. My feet are never comfortable in the thing.
No.
I just can't do it. But you know how they're like, oh, jump, go up like that. Like when I'm like standing, on the steering wheel.
God, that
crazy.
Sounds awful.
It's
I've
awful.
Never taken a spinning
Oh my God,
class.
My dreams are the worst.
Yeah.
They're the worst. Anyway, obviously the story makes national news.
Yes.
But like what doesn't make national news is like, and here are the papers that were found at the scene, right? It was just like, oh, this person, right? Like,
yeah. Sorry, I just got to the part of my notes where I'm like, oh, right. And here's something they just drop in. So this is another major thing that would be reason enough for the plant to want to have her killed.
The plant was missing anywhere from 40 to 60 pounds of plutonium, enough to make multiple bombs.
Multiple bombs. And we learned that just weeks before Karen died, she told a fellow employee, a guy named James Knoll, she told him that she knew it.
Yeah.
Like she stumbled upon this information. Like that to me is maybe even bigger
Huge.
Than all the contamination.
And like she didn't tell him how she found out. She just said that she knows. So we will never get to the bottom of exactly what she uncovered.
No, but like somebody says, if this is real, 40 to 60 pounds of plutonium is missing. That means that the United States was involved in nuclear proliferation.
Yes.
And Karen Silkwood was about to break that story to the New York Times.
In addition to everything else.
That is world-shaking, earth-shattering news.
Major. And so this, of course, prompted investigations from the FBI and the CIA. There was a congressional investigation.
Yeah.
But our journalist friends are like, just in the simplest terms, she knew too much.
Exactly.
And she stumbled upon more than just the dangers of all these chemicals. And the United States was involved in all this horrible shit. And it's like, well...
Like one of the deepest secrets held by the United States, Karen Silkwood figured it out.
And all of her papers are just gone.
And they're all gone.
And this was the day she was on her way to the meeting. It doesn't take... You don't have to be a conspiracy theorist.
No.
To put two and two together and be like, okay, something happened here.
Exactly. So we learned that the Kerr-McGee plant closed in 1975.
Bye.
I know. Karen's family sued the company for gross negligence, eventually settling for more than $1 million. I looked it up. That would be $6.6 million.
And everyone still has their streets named after them.
Wild.
In spite of it all.
Pensavalli Circle.
Circle.
Pensavalli Circle.
It's funny. It's been 50 years of conspiracy theories and questions and no movement on the case at all.
The official accepted legal narrative is that she fell asleep at the wheel.
Like,
because despite
she was
the movies,
hammered?
Because she took a fucking Xanax.
Like,
no.
No. So journalists Bob and Mike have uncovered recordings. There are these two sets of tapes.
This is why we're here.
So the set of tapes number one is an impromptu investigation, they call it, by this former highway patrolman. And he just found himself in the middle of one of of the famous, most famous cases ever named Larry.
So this guy has kind of a badass backstory. Like they said, he's an Oklahoma law enforcement legend known for his heroic actions during the 1995 Oklahoma City bombings when he ran into the rubble to save trapped people. Like, fucking good on you, Larry.
Right.
But he says in the early 90s, he started recording these tapes when he was a state trooper because in his investigation, according to Larry, he heard what really happened to Karen Silkwood was some local officers were working off duty for the Kerr McGee company who owned the plant. And the crash that killed Karen Silkwood didn't happen the way the authorities said. They said, an attorney tells this Larry guy that a former Oklahoma City cop said that he and three other off-duty officers were tailing Karen because they're working for the company, like, off hours.
Said they had been drinking a little bit, and they were following her. They bumped her, knocked her off the road, probably with no intentions necessarily of killing her, but she runs off the road and hits this big concrete abutment and kills her instantly.
But she hits the concrete embankment and dies.
And Larry the cop is like, sure, Jan.
Right.
Sure.
But like, he's saying that like, he believes that she was killed. Like, this is what happened,
right,
according to this attorney who heard it from the cops.
Heard
who
it
did
from
it.
And heard it from and heard it from.
Yeah.
But apparently,
but it doesn't sound implausible to me.
No, it doesn't. But I don't buy the like, we were just going to nudge her car to scare her. Like, no.
Right.
That's
right,
the part,
right.
I don't,
yeah,
buy.
Yeah.
Because Larry starts asking around and apparently he says it's confirmation, but it's really like other people also have heard the story before,
yes,
independently from him, I guess. And so everyone in town knows the story and they're like, Larry, girl, shut up, man.
Yeah.
Like, if you keep looking into this, like, you'll be in danger, girl.
I don't know. I mean, the thing about this to me is that, like, this sounds totally plausible. Like, the company hired cops to tail her. They told them to kill her.
Cops will get away with it. They'll scoop up the papers. The end.
And so that's the thing. My only question is, like, can four people keep a secret all their lives?
Well, because Larry eventually gets the names of these people supposedly,
yes,
involved in this version of the story, and he takes the names to the FBI and the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation, and nothing comes of it, and no one will comment on it now. And I'm like, well, guess what? All four people allegedly involved are dead. So we're,
right,
never going to really get to the bottom of this anyway. Does it sound plausible? For sure.
Yeah. And I'm like, none of them told their wife. None of them told their kid. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm like, no, they literally took that secret to the grave, which is, or not, because they're cops and they can cover shit up and get away.
Well,
like, this does sound like a plausible explanation to me.
Except don't act like you're just trying to scare her.
Exactly.
That's the only thing I'm like,
yeah,
but sure. But
yeah,
again, like, most big lies have enough truth where it's like, well, that makes sense.
And especially if, like, the company knew that, like, tomorrow was the day that Karen Silkwood's gonna blow up our secret about nuclear proliferation and the United States' involvement in that.
It's huge.
Yeah.
So the other set of tapes.
Okay, here we go.
Is from a guy who, quote, kept really good secrets.
A guy named Joe Royer. He was a private investigator on the tape. Bob knew the guy. One of our journalist friends knew the guy. He died. He calls the widow and he's like, are there any recordings, anything like that? She's like, yeah, I do think there are some in some boxes in our storage.
So she hands over the key to the storage unit.
Oh my God.
Mike and Bob are thrilled. This is their—
it's a warehouse.
This is all their President's Men moments.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And so they're like rifling through everything and they eventually find the box with all of this stuff from the case.
Right here, Bobby.
What'd you find?
It's the Silkwood investigation tapes. Here they are.
There they are.
Fluffy tea.
Yeah, it's all here.
There they are.
Holy mackerel.
Something called Deep Throat.
And there's a tape labeled Deep Throat. And they're like, oh my God, this is really our
here
movie
we go
moment.
Yeah.
So these tapes are between Joe the PI and members of law enforcement.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Is there a smoking gun?
No.
No!
There's
like,
nothing
there's
here.
There's this moment where it's like, okay, wait. Did we find— we got 5 minutes of the documentary of them like cracking open the vault and we see them find the tapes and
their
it's like,
Geraldo,
oh my God.
Moment where it's like nothing's in the vault.
Literally. And then it cuts back to them in the interview. They're like, well, there's no smoking gun.
Well,
but
What they do say, again, it's plausible deniability. It's just stuff where it's like, if you're listening for it, whatever. But
yeah,
like the former secretary for the Oklahoma Police Department Intelligence Unit, she's,
yes,
like, look, on the tape, she says, I don't want to talk about this. I don't want any trouble. And I don't want any trouble with my car or anything else.
Oh my God.
So at first you're like, wait. Or
yeah,
maybe
yeah,
she's
yeah,
just referencing one of the biggest news stories that's ever happened.
Yeah.
Or maybe she's saying that's how they do things and I don't want my brakes to be cut or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, the big thing we learned here is that the Oklahoma Oklahoma City police had cutting-edge surveillance technology. So the question was, were they using that surveillance technology on Karen Silkwood? Is that how they found out what she knew, and so they had to kill her?
And, like, when and where she was going, so that if they did something to her car,
right,
that would be the reason?
Exactly. Now, it is curious, like, why would Oklahoma City Police Department have such, like, wild cutting-edge technology?
Yeah.
You would think that, like, if the government of the United States knew that Karen Silkwood knew the biggest state secret of all time, that, like, she knew 60 pounds of plutonium was missing, maybe they would have shipped some of that good surveillance equipment down to Oklahoma City. So, like, that makes sense.
And what the hell did that investigation uncover? Nothing?
Nothing.
All these, the FBI and the CIA being like, hey, about those 50 pounds of chemicals, like, where are they, U.S. government?
But where are
they? Like, but where'd they go?
But, like, to this day, where are they?
Where are they?
You know what I mean?
What happened?
That's my big takeaway from this one.
Right?
You know?
So, this former secretary is like, I think they were doing these illegal wiretaps, but as much as I agree that something horrible happened to Karen Silkwood, there's no proof of it in these tapes.
No, and I love that, like, at the end of this part of the interview, they go back to Bob and Mike, our reporters, and they're like,
our hope was that it would be the long sought after smoking gun. But, you know, it's kind of like those National Treasure movies. One clue leads to another clue leads to another clue.
Don't you invoke the name of the National Treasure. I fucking love those movies.
I've never seen any of them.
Oh, it's like Nicolas Cage, like, right, doing like the...
Like stealing the Declaration of Independence or something.
I love it so much.
That's it.
Oh my God. And like they find like invisible ink on the back and shit.
Right. That's like a fun popcorn movie.
I love it so much. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But they're just like, there really isn't anything here.
Right. And then they go back to the guy who investigated the crash independently, who also investigated Princess Diana's...
A.O. Pipkins.
Murder.
Adolfo Alfonso.
Yeah. And so to make things more complicated, her name is also Karen.
Yeah,
so
it's his daughter. So, like, we learn that this guy, A.O., on his deathbed, says to his daughter in the most dramatic way possible,
right,
please hold on to this evidence.
Tell my story.
Tell my story. He's got the bumper. He's got Karen Silkwood's bumper, because that's what Bob and Mike are looking for. Anything that was actually at the crash scene that, like, might hold evidence.
And let me tell you, we are there, and we're just looking at a bumper.
No, but wait, can I tell you, this is insane, because... the daughter has done the thing, and she's held on to the bumper for all of these years, and we're being told that maybe this bumper is going to hold the key to this whole thing. She walks them into the garage to show them the bumper. The bumper is on a pile of newspapers on top of an old refrigerator next to bottles of bleach. This is not a piece of evidence that has been well preserved. It does not matter what is on this bumper. No court would ever uphold evidence. Like, it's been sitting in this garage for 50 years.
It's where you would, like, store a broken old bumper and
right,
not the bumper from the Karen Silkwood case.
Exactly. Like, remember in the staircase when we found the blowpoke and it was like, you don't touch it.
I thought...
I know, I'm sorry.
I thought I was safe.
This is a safe space. This
that
should be a safe space.
Like...
I know. Blowpoke haunted us for years.
For years.
So but remember, like, they found it and there was, like, the cobwebs and nobody could touch it. You got to film it and then
you got to get it. Like, not this.
But, like, it is kind of amazing to see the bumper of Karen Silkwood's car. Like, that is kind of an amazing artifact.
And what she's showing them is that, because she says, my father was 100% positive that Karen did not die from falling asleep at the wheel.
Yeah.
And they're like, and she's like, here's the evidence.
But then,
and here's,
like,
the bumper.
And then these two reports who've been on this case for 50 years are like,
my God.
Holy mackerel, there's black stuff in it still.
Yeah.
Is that good?
Yes.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
There's black marks on it.
Doesn't matter.
She's like, it could be from anything.
Yeah.
It's like, this bumper has not been preserved.
It's
and it's not been wrapped
bumper.
Up. It's been a 50-year-old bumper that's been in a garage for 50 years.
Yeah, it's not.
No evidentiary value.
And I know what they're probably, someone might be able to be like, oh, well, that dent shows this or what the physics are. Like, I don't think they're actually talking about, like, forensics in terms of, like, fingerprints or anything or any chemicals on it.
Can you imagine being a friend going into this lady's garage and being like, what's that bumper? Oh, that's Karen Silkwood's bumper.
And I'm like, it's just out like that.
Like, that is an artifact.
Yeah,
that
needs, it is.
You know what I mean?
And it's like, I wish it gave us more.
Yeah.
I wish we had more answers, but
yeah.
I left with more answers than I came in with.
No, you mean questions.
More questions, yes, yeah. Yes. No, not an answer in sight about
not
anything.
Not an answer in sight.
And in particular, the 50 or maybe 60 pounds of chemicals that are just, like, gone somewhere.
I was going to say, the two things I learned in this documentary is how amazing Karen Silkwood was and that there is 60 pounds of plutonium out there that is still unaccounted for all of these years later.
Yeah. And then we meet a new guy named Steve Irwin.
Crikey.
No relation.
Not that Steve Irwin.
But he's like a new crash investigator, the guy who took over the Princess Di person. And so this Steve Irwin is like one of A.O. Pipkin's proteges.
His whole thing is he's here to like use modern technology to recreate the crash scene. And this is actually kind of, because we learn there are two of these embankments where like she crashed into one of them. And for 50 years, we got the wrong embankment.
Yeah.
So like this crash scene investigation is able to be like, it was actually this one and not that one, which seems important.
Very important.
But also, like, he's able to say that
if she leaves at 55 and gets down to 30, then it implies braking.
His analysis essentially rules out the highway patrol's official cause of the crash.
There's not evidence here that would say Miss Silkwood was asleep all the way to that head wall. Quite the opposite. It feels like this idea of braking and steering feels pretty well supported by the evidence that we're confident in.
She had to have braked to have done that, so she could not have been asleep. Right. So, like, the point of this guy is to say, like, she was not asleep at the wheel. No matter what happened, she was not asleep at the wheel.
But, however, he cannot prove one way or the other if there was a second vehicle.
Right.
He says that evidence isn't available.
I mean, we got the bumper. It's not available.
Right. But you know? Karen Silkwood's family is actually happy about this.
Yeah.
Because they feel like now they have two very good people telling them, like, she was not asleep.
No.
And so they feel better knowing that, like, no, we're right. We're not crazy.
No.
Something bad happened to her and she wasn't, like, popping pills and getting behind the wheel. Like, no, she wasn't.
And may I just say, I don't think she was, but if she was, if she, like, again, those pills were prescribed for the anxiety that she was feeling, harboring probably the deepest, darkest national security secret anybody's ever known in this country.
And then she was on her way to tell the world about it.
Exactly. So, like,
that would stress you out, too.
Me, so if she had taken the pill, which I don't think she did, but if she did, I don't fucking blame her.
And even if she took one,
it
wouldn't have made her pass out after 7 minutes.
No.
It doesn't matter.
No.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And also, do the fucking autopsy then, coppers.
Right, exactly.
Let's get the science to tell us exactly what, like, give me a break.
Right.
And so, like, the papers have been destroyed, I guess.
Oh, we don't know. They've been lost. Like, the idea was that the papers were put back in the car. Was the car just, like, taken and totaled? You know?
And that's a problem.
I mean, it is the problem. Can you imagine? Like, because what they're saying in the end is, like,
there's always a smoking gun somewhere. We just haven't found it yet.
If we could find those papers, it would change everything.
100%. I believe the papers were taken out of the car by someone.
We think this can be solved if we can ever find the papers. And I'm like, boys, I've got bad news for
They've
you.
They've been long destroyed.
They're long destroyed.
Long destroyed. So to me, it's like, I don't know if we will ever know 100% what happened, but I know something bad happened.
Something bad happened.
Just an innocent accident.
No, it absolutely was not.
No way.
Karen Silkwood was murdered.
Absolutely. She knew too much.
Yeah. Oh my God, girl, we did the, what's it called?
What Happened to Karen Silkwood, The Lost Tapes.
I mean, wild.
Wild.
So wild. Don't forget to follow us on YouTube, fam. Go subscribe, True Crime Obsessed Podcast. Over 150,000 subscribers.
Crazy.
It is insane. We've got a Disky, Jillian's Queen of the Disc.
Discord, it's really fun. It's just like a nice way to communicate and share things. And I don't know, it's fun.
Yeah,
it's
over great.
There. Yeah.
What are we doing next, girl?
Thirst Trap, The Fame, The Fantasy, The Fallout.
What is that?
It's insane. It's two episodes. We're going to do it in one.
Ooh.
It's about a guy who went viral, this like young guy, and all of these women were obsessed with him, and then it, like, shit got bad because we can't have nice things on the internet.
No.
So it became like a doxing thing, but people were just like giving him money because they thought he was cute. He like winked at them, and then the video went viral and everyone was like, take my mortgage, take my 401k.
Why couldn't that have been my life, girl?
I mean,
you know what I mean?
So, but it gets crazy. It's just like a warning about being online a little too
much. Yeah. All right. Well, listen, stay tuned for the trailer for that. Yeah. And we love you.
We love you.
All right,
stay
bye.
Safe, please. Bye.
If you haven't seen William White on your social media feeds recently, lip-syncing to retro hits, well then check your phone, it's probably broken.
21-year-old William White now has 2 million followers.
We gave up our lives to raise children, be married, but Whitey, your phenomenon keyed us back into that fun part of our lives.
Everybody knows William White is the cougar panty remover.
The older fans spend. They have money.
I've probably given him $100,000 to $200,000.
It was kind of an addictive thing to get him to say your name.
Thank you, Karen, for the PayPal.
Watching William's TikToks, I was surprised at the feelings that were coming up within me.
I feel like a lot of my fans needed to feel young again, like gain a spark back.
I've been lusting after William White, who's younger than my son.
You'll always want me.